Cool. What's up, guys? Yeah, my name's Abe. I'm a recovered alcoholic and quite the cocaine addict. And man, I'm grateful to be here. You know, I was having mixed feelings, you know, because my sobriety birthday is not till Tuesday. And I tell my story every year, the Sunday after my birthday, and I got booked a week early, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, you know. It doesn't feel right. It's not a celebration. But that's ego, because this is a celebration. Every day for us is a celebration, you know, and I forget that because I get wrapped up into, you know, I'm not getting my way or my way's not, you know. The minutiae of the day, you know, and I forget about the gratitude of the moment, you know, and I remind myself, you know, I have several practices where I remind myself of just coming back to the moment where everything's perfect, you know, just the way it is, you know, even if I'm not getting my way, it's still the way it's supposed to be right now, you know, and none of this happened by mistake. You know, this is part of the design, you know, the pandemic, just all of it, you know, this is by design. And I'm so grateful, you know, one of my favorite lines in the book, I usually close with it, but, I'm going to change it up. I told some friends I'd change it up tonight, talking to Bill and Tony. And, on page 124, says, showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. It's the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. You know, cling to the thought that my dark past is the greatest possession I have, you know, in God's hands. In my hands, it's just guilt and shame, you know, but it's the reason we're all here right now, you know, and how special is this group. I love looking at all the squares and just like, you know, because I also have this mind that's like brilliant. And I'm writing stories about each one of you, like that guy sucked at baseball, you know, his dad hated him. Poor little thing, you know, I don't even want to tell her story, you know, it's like I have brilliant stories for each one of you, you know. It's like this guy's like a Russian hitman, and you know, I could scroll through and like, you know, write a beautiful ending for all of this, but you know, I every meeting that I share in, I like to go to gratitude and surrender, you know, because that's what this whole thing's about, you know, that's what my whole story's about, it's gratitude and surrender, you know, and it was a beating for so many years, just trying to crush, you know, trying to satiate this thing that alcohol, dope, women, money, career, you know, none of that could fill this thing, you know, and I tried all of it, you know, a lot of all of it, and none of it could fill what was going on inside of here. And I still chuckle when I hear, you know, in a mixed meeting, when I hear someone else say, like, I'm trying to fill the hole inside of me. And like, I'm still a 10-year-old when I hear someone say that. Like, she's trying to fill her hole. I walked into Austin Recovery in October of 04, you know, I was told to make a date. I know it was a few days before my dad's birthday, but I don't remember the date because I was loaded to the gills when I walked into the treatment, you know, and, yeah, I'm talking like half a handle of whiskey, six Xanax. I mean, I wasn't sure if you guys knew how to detox me. I know how to detox me. You know, give me a handful of pills, put the AC on 60, make me a sandwich, wake me up in 3 days. You know, I know how to detox, you know, and, I did my usual routine, took as many pills as I could without, you know, turning blue. And, I went into Austin Recovery and I didn't go in willing this time. I hit my first treatment center at 13 years old. And I've been ultimatumed a bunch of times to try and get sober, you know, if you don't stop, you know, I need you out of here. I'm like, well, then I'm out of here. You know, if you don't stop, well, I'm taking the kid. Take the kid. You know, you can't ultimatum me sober, you know, but this time they caught me at a low, you know, I heard something in a meeting the other day as an acronym for God or whatever, and it's the gift of desperation. You know, and I had that, you know, gift of desperation. I had it, and I wish I could pass it on to everybody I work with. You know, that gift of desperation, the merciless ass whipping that crack cocaine and whiskey gave to me. I wish I could pass it to every square on this screen. You know, and just give you my desperation that I came in here with. You know, the whatever you need me to do, I'll do. You know, because we lose that so quick. I came in and, you know, and I got ultimatumed again, you know, but this time I heard it and I was like, I'll do detox, but I'm not doing rehab. I've already done rehab. You know, that shit doesn't work. You know, and it was my last day of detox. And, you know, I saw all the little junkies running out the back door, you know, like, and I knew, like, if I left, I was drinking again and I was doing dope again. And all the people in rehab were like, hey, we're going to the ranch. We're going to the ranch. And I saw the flyer and there's like a horse and a swimming pool. And, you know, I'm like, I want to go to the ranch. That sounds pretty good, you know, but I knew if I would have left detox, I was gone. And I went to the business office and they're like, that'll be like 17,000 or however much they said it was going to be. I was like, I don't have shit. You know, I gave you everything I had for detox. And yeah, I remember one lady who like, she was a counselor in detox, and I remember she kind of liked me, so I drew on her heartstrings. I was like, I went into her office, like, if you let me out of here, I'm gonna die. You know, just like she went into the business office, and they said if we have one county funded bed, if this guy doesn't show up at 3 o'clock, you can have his spot. And, you know, I always tell this story about, like, how I didn't believe in God. I came in with no God, and that's just not the truth, you know, because I said this prayer at that moment. It's like, God, let this guy go drink and do dope for one more day. You know, just the most selfish prayer you could ever say for someone not to show up to go save their life, you know. And sure enough, the guy didn't show up. And here's how fast the ego rebuilds. I got that spot in rehab. And the lady was like, all right, let's go. You know, get your stuff, put it in the van. I'm like, cool. Let me, I need to run by the house. I need to get some things together. I need to send some emails. Let me run to the office. And I'll meet you guys at the rehab. And she's like, no, get in the druggy buggy. We're going to rehab. I'm like, yeah, surrender, you know, surrender. And I did, I surrendered. She was like, what are you going to do in 10 minutes that you haven't done in 10 years? And that just kind of hit me. You know, what email am I going to send that's poignant enough to apologize for the last 10 years of debauchery and being missing from people's lives? And, you know, how, what message am I going to leave on your phone? A text message, go to rehab. Sorry about all the, you know, sorry about messing around with your girlfriend and losing that job and getting kicked out of all those bars. You know, what can you send on your way to rehab? So I got there and it did not look like the flyer. You know, it was like, I got there and it was like, bunk style situation, dormitory style situation, warehouse of drug addicts. And I was just like, oh my God, you got me. You know, it was like, and I'm a sales guy, so I appreciate when you get me, you know, like, all right, well played. You know, I bought your $200 piece of crap, you know, whatever. So I was like, 30 days. I know how to do 30 days. You know, I'll go sit with the Mexicans, play dominoes. Let me out in 30 days. You know, I already know how to do this. You know, and I did. I went and sat with the Mexicans, and I was like, what's up? You know, I was trying to see what the currency was. Like, y'all need cigarettes. You guys need coffee. I know some people, you know, I'll get some stuff. And like, you know, whatever, what can I do to make this as easy as possible? You know, so you need me, because I need you to need me. I need people to need, you know, because as a true codependent, I need you to need something from me, you know. And the guy was like, yeah, it's not really like that. We're just trying to get well. Like, damn, there's no hustle. You know, there's no hustle here. You know, and that sucked, because I don't know how to navigate relationship, you know, where you don't need something from me and I'm not trying to get something from you. I don't know how to have genuine relations with people. And it was like, the gig is up. You know, the gig was up. I'm sitting in rehab. There's no one to call. You can't hide behind the phone, like, you're looking through things and like being busy, like you're stuck there with yourself. And this is 30 days. And I remember sitting in rehab, I was like, this is my shot. You know, sitting there, like, this is my shot to be the man, become the man I've always wanted to be. You know, the guy with integrity who comes home when he says he's going to come home. You know, the guy that does what he says he's going to do. You know, this is my shot. And I still fall short of that ideal, but this is my shot to become that man. And I took advantage of it, you know, and the guys came in with 20 plus years and big watches and big trucks, and I didn't hear a word they said, but this dude came in, you know, he's still one of my best friends today. He had 6 months of sobriety, lived in a sober house. He worked in a kitchen, $8 an hour. And I wanted big Mexican dude, busted up grill. I wanted what this dude had. This dude had freedom. I believe he drank and did dope the way I did, and I believe he didn't ever have to do it again. I said, I'm going to give this thing a shot. You know, I was going to try it mechanically one time. Like, I was almost going to prove that it doesn't work on, like, free-thinking artist types like myself. Like, it might work on you, like, sheep that just, like, buy into things. They're just like, God, you know, you God sheep, you know, but it's not going to work on me. And I love the way Chris talks about the mechanics of this program, because I was gonna prove that it didn't work, and in the mechanics of surrender, I'm not good at surrender. You know, I grew up alpha Hispanic. My dad was a boxing instructor, like. We don't stop fighting, you know, always throw your hands up, always. It doesn't matter if you're getting whooped, always keep your hands up, you know, and you don't stop fighting. I don't care if you get beat, the guy needs to know your name, you know, and I don't know how to not fight. And this thing's asking me to set my sword and my shield at the door, you know, and I'm exposed. I don't have any tools, you know. I can't, there's no hustle. There's no fight. We cease fighting anything and everyone. I don't know how to navigate this, but, and there's where I learned surrender. You know, I came in exposed. It's like, I don't know the words to the book. I don't have eloquent shares. I don't, you know, I'm exposed. I have nothing. I'm nothing. I don't, it's, you know, I used to think I was like, I thought I was like really good looking and like a smooth talker, and winds up I sold cocaine, and yeah, I was not quite as smooth as I thought I was. I was like overweight and no lines whatsoever, no game at all. But, you know, I became in that surrender. You know, my surrender looks like face in the dirt, someone's shoulder between my knee blades, like between my shoulder, someone's knee and my shoulder blades, hands behind my back. Like, that's surrender. That's the surrender I know about. You know, and this surrender's different. You know, this surrender's like, I like where it talks about the actor. You know, we're like the actor trying to run the show. Because that was my gig, you know. I'm whoever you need me to be in that moment, you know. You're punk rock. I love punk rock. You know, you're heavy metal. I'm heavy metal, you know. You like classic rock. I love classic rock. You're a funk guy. Man, I love, you know, I grew up on funk. You know, it's just whatever I need. I'm whatever you need me to be right now, you know, so I can get whatever I want from this situation. You know, I remember my counselor in treatment. She said, Abe, do you ever stop manipulating and conning? She was like, you don't even know how to inflect your voice without trying to get what you want. And I was like, Gail, that's what inflection is for. You know, and I went into, you know, why we inflect our voices so we can get what we want. And she was like, this is what I'm talking about. Are you never wrong? And, yeah, I've got something to say about everything. So in surrender, in step one, I surrender, you know. I can't successfully drink. And that's what surrender really is. I cannot successfully drink. It's not I'm powerless over people, places, and things. You know, you hear that so much. But I love what Chris says. Yeah, but that's not the point. That's not what we're talking about. Talking about I'm powerless once I take a drink. I'm powerless if I go take a drink untreated. I left home at 15. Lived all up and down the West Coast, and remember I was 19 years old. I found myself home. I'd blown my knee out playing football, got hooked on pills, trying to do a geographical to get off the pills, and I wound up in Seattle, Washington, walking the docks, just remember the first time I tried white heroin. It was like changed my life. And next thing you know, I'm, you know, this guy asked me, you ever a commercial fish? I'm like, yeah, oh, of course, a commercial fish. Like, my family owns boats out of Corpus. Like, we've been commercial fishing since I was a kid, you know, and it was just not the truth. Like, I went deep sea fishing once when I was a kid, but you know, I'm whatever you need me to be at that moment. You know, I, next thing you know, I'm in, Dutch Harbor, Alaska, bobbing up and down on a fishing boat. And, you know, with the skill set that I said I had that I didn't have, you know, and, he's like, I need eight knot here, eight knots over there, you know, tie two hitches there. I'm like, well, you know, you're going to have to show me what an Alaskan hitch knot is. We do it a little differently in Texas. And the guy was so mad. He's just like, oh my God, you don't know shit about fishing, you know? And he kept calling me Tex. He was like, come on, Tex, I need you over here. I need you over here, you know? And finally I just grab him and I hold him over the side of the ship. I'm like, dude, if you talk to me like that in front of the guys again, you're swimming. You know, and he was like, this guy was like twice my size. Like, I shouldn't have done that, you know. And the guy said to me, he was like, you're nuts, Tex. He was like, I want you working on the top deck with me. And he showed me how to tie knots and he showed me how to pull rigs. He taught me how to commercial fish. 3 seasons later, I'm a commercial fisherman, but in my mind, I'm still the kid that lied to get on that ship. You know, I did the work to become the commercial fisherman, but I still see myself as the guy who lied to get that position. You know, people talk about not being able to get this program because of the God thing. You know, mine was when it says there are those who do not recover, people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. And it talks about there are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. You know, it wasn't the God thing that scared me. You know, this is the part that scared me. So I don't know rigorous honesty. You know, I know how to hustle. I know how to manipulate. I don't know how to live a rigorous, honest life. You know, a transparent life. I don't even know what that looks like. You know, and I don't know what kind of time I got. What time do you guys roll to, Chris? Like 8:15? 8:20. Cool. I can stay loaded a little while longer. I'm in Dutch Harbor, Alaska. Gil said I said I had that I didn't have. And I come home, you know, most money I've ever made. I'm 19 years old, come home like $20,000 in my pocket. I'm like, man, I'm going to live the rest of my year. I'm not even going to have to work. It's like more money, legal money that I've made in ever, you know. And yeah, and I blew through it quick, you know. We stopped on the Vegas on the way home, and next thing you know, I've got like 1,700 blocks, you know. It's just, it goes pretty quick. And but I always luck into the next gig. You know, I ran into these, my girlfriend at the time, her best friend's mom was a stagehand. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm working stages, I'm building stages, and I'm working with AC/DC, Motley Crue, George Strait, George Jones, Sesame Street Live. You know, I don't want to throw any big names around there, but, you know, I kind of used to party with Big Bird, whatever. You know, he goes hard in the paint. But, you know, it's the same thing. You know, have you ever driven forklift? Oh, man, I'm licensed in, like, 4 states, you know. There's not even a license for forklift, but, you know, he didn't know that. Have you ever done light, sound, pyrotechnics? Dude, of course I did. You know, I used to, you know, you just make up random shit for any job that I wanted to get. You know, and nobody, you know, this was before the internet. This is the 90s. You know, you could say you did things and people just believed you. And the thing is, I did that for almost a decade and I still didn't see myself as stage tech. I was still the kid that lied to get that position. You know, even when you believed I was that guy, I still wasn't that guy. You know, there's so many strings of these kind of positions. You know, one year I was trying to get sober. I moved to Brownsville, Texas to my cousin that I used to hustle with down in South Texas. We used to do interstate commerce down from Mexico to here. And, he had just got pinched. He went down for some time and his wife wanted us to open up a mortgage company. And, she was like, you don't even need to know finance. You know, it's just bullshit sales. And I'm like, I can do bullshit sales. Like, you just tell me what to say. I'll sell it, you know. And next thing you know, it's a decade later in the industry. But my ego rebuilt so quick. I'm living in their pool house. And, you know, 3 months later, I'm smoking coke in front of their kids and drinking, like, every day. And it just gets ugly so quick. And we can have kids. It's my little man. So I'll go PG very soon. Yeah, none of that happened. So, where was I? In my cousin's pool house, yeah. Smoking around their kids, you know. Next thing you know, it's time to go. You know, they're like, hey, man, you got to go. And it's so hard to be asked to leave the Hispanic household, you know, because we can live at home until we're like 50, you know, and that's called like, I'm taking care of my folks. You know? But I got asked to leave the house, you know, and that was hard. It was crushing for them, too, to ask someone you love to leave, you know, and I almost felt bad for them for having to ask me to leave. Like a true codependent, you know, so I'm at their house. I moved back to Austin. Austin's the velvet rut. You know, I always come back to Austin because it's cozy. It's a soft place to fall. And born and raised here. And, you know, same thing. Went to work for a mortgage company. They were like, hey, have you ever done VA, FHA loans? I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, that's all we did in South Texas. You know, I never had, but how different could it be? You know, it's only federally funded money, you know. But, yeah, it's different. Yeah, I was going to get that training week paycheck, and I was sitting in the office just trying to blend in for a week until that training week paycheck came. And finally, my broker comes to my desk. He's like, where's this file? Where's the Smith file? Where's the... And they're all just sitting right where he left them on my desk. And he called me into his office, and he was just like, oh, he was like, Abe, you are so full of shit. Just like, I want you on my sales team. So, once again, I get rewarded for, you know, for my deception. And yeah, and I was so embarrassed about getting caught in the lie. And he walks out to my truck on my way out, and he's like, hey, man, it's going to be all right. And he gives me a handful of weed. And I'm just like, oh, my God. I own the company now. Like, now that I know he's a little dirty, I can tell him exactly where what he gave me came from, how much it cost them, like which warehouse it was kept in. Like, I know more about what he just handed me than he'll ever know. You know, it's like, and sure enough, it happened. I'm top sales guy, corner office, bought a house, an investment property. Like, it just happened so quick. And I'm partying with this guy. We're drinking and smoking and doing things. And he's the one that intervened on me. You know, this guy that I'm drinking with, he intervened on me. And he's like, hey, man, you're going to have to go get some help. And that was the guy that I said, I'll go to detox, but I'm not going to rehab. And I remember waking up in my house, you know, it was like Tuesday or Wednesday. I thought I missed a day of work maybe, but I wasn't sure, but it was already midweek. And I go into the office, been drinking, you know, for days. And he just shakes his head, and he's just like, I can't watch you die, you know. And I went to Austin Recovery, and I had these big red blotches on my arms, and the doctor told me that my liver and my kidneys were shutting down, and the alcohol was trying to get through my skin. I'm like on the verge of death, you know. They wanted me to go to the ER first, but they let me in. And the reason I'm so grateful for Austin Recovery, I served on their alumni for 10 years. I was sat in every position. I went to every camp out, cookout, spiritual retreat. Anything that was asked of me, I did for 10 years because that's the way I was taught gratitude. Gratitude's an action. And, so I never go, I haven't gone this direction on my story in so long. I always talk about steps and, you know, promises and all that stuff. But a buddy of mine, you know, I told him I would tell the Alaska part of the story because he loves that part. But I told the Alaska part, Max. Good job. Now I'm lost again. Back to step. First step, I surrender. Second step, maybe there's something. Who knows? You know, third step, I gave my life to this thing that I'll call God now, because, you know, I say I came in with no God. That's not my truth. My truth is I have 2 pounds, an 8-ball, and a pistol under my seat, and I see those lights flashing, and I'm like, oh, God, please just get me through this. Just don't let him smell my breath, please. Just give me a warning. So I say I came in with no God, but that's not my truth. I had something. I had a foxhole prayer that I always, it was ingrained in me. That third step, I did my third step with my sponsor at an AA club. And they had, there's a big room and a small room. And outside the windows, there's mirrored windows. And you can see out and they can't see in. And I did my third step with my sponsor. We got on our knees. We held hands. And people were out on the patio. And my ADD is so bad. I'm like, no one move. And then we did that prayer and we held hands. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you will. Relieve me from the bondage of stuff that I might ever do you will. Take away my difficulties, the victory over them will bear with them. The better that it helps you pass your love and your best life and do your will of it. And, you know, it was fine. It wasn't a white light yet. But, I remember it made me think of this thing. It was like I had a flashback of laying in between the hotel bed, arm numb, just about to OD, sweating, belly full of whiskey, and I remember writing this note. You know, I really thought I was going to die that night, and I remember writing this note and said, "Mom, this is not a suicide; it's an overdose." You know, because even when I'm dead, I want to dictate what you think of me. You know, that's how much I want to control things. Like, even when I'm passed away, I want you to know that I went out on my, you know, I went out partying, you know. I don't want you to think that I, you know. And I had that realization. Here I am giving my life to God or this power. And all I can think about is what someone else might be seeing. I hope nobody can see in that window and see me there holding hands with that guy. I was like, oh, my God, this feels so gay. I hope no one can see. You know, I'm sitting there holding hands with this guy, and all I can think about is what someone else might be thinking about me. Like seeing me in this submissive, weak position like a sheep, you know, giving my life to this thing that all these sheep believe in. And, but whatever, I said the words because I was going to go through this thing mechanically. And we go outside, and I still smoked at the time. And I lit up, and I smoked, and it was October. It was maybe early November. It was beautiful. And I had this dog at the time. And I used to see her laying out in the grass, and just sun warming her fur. She'd have these zen moments. Anyone who has a cat or a dog, you know, they just, or a kid, you know, you look at them just laying there, absorbing just that moment. You're like, man, that must be nice just to be, you know. And I took a drag of my cigarette, and I felt the sun warming my skin, and I felt the wind on the back of my neck. And I remember thinking, you know, I felt like my dog laying out in the yard, you know. And my sponsor said to someone over here, he said, right here, right now, right this second, everything's okay. And I got goosebumps, and I still get them when I tell the story. Right here, right now, right this second, everything's okay. And I found how to access that power. I found the key to accessing that power is right here in the moment. You know, how beautiful is this moment? All you guys in all these little squares, like, just trying to get well, you know, and just trying to be the best versions of yourself that you can be. You know, this is cool. You know, I hope you guys can see what I see in these things, in these windows. You know, I see hope. You know, and I remember sitting in Austin Recovery and watching there's an old wino that came in. He was another county funded guy, and he came in, and I remember seeing him a week later. He was just busted up, tore up from the floor up wino, you know. But a week later, he's out there playing volleyball, and like he's sitting around with the guys and just having belly laughs. And I remember seeing in his eyes like that thing. I remember when it hit his eyes, I was like, oh my God. I saw power flow into him. You know, and I at the time I called it hope, but now I'm okay to call it God. You know, I saw that thing flow into him, and I was like, man, this thing is possible and it's accessible. And I like what Chris says, the effects of doing this work are repeatable, and even better than that, they're refinable. Every time I do this work or take somebody through this work, I get an effect produced by it, just like I got from weed, just like I got from alcohol. I get an effect produced by it, but it's repeatable, refinable. Like my happiness is exponential. You know, I'm scratching the surface of what I could be right now. You know, and this is 16 years of sobriety, and I'm just, you know, I see potential in me today, you know, a potential to be happier, the potential to be the guy that I want to become still. You know, it's a work in progress. You know, I fall short. We all fall short, you know, it's the human condition. I like them. There's a doctor, I was reading in the big book on page 570, and Terry alluded to it earlier today. There's a guy, doctor named W.W. Bauer. He was a broadcaster for ABC, and he went to a few meetings, you know, just for like a week, and he was doing a thing on Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was talking about what he was reporting about what he saw in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And he said, let's see, they're not crusaders. They're not a temperance society. They know that they must never drink. They help others with similar problems. In this atmosphere, the alcoholic overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself. And that's my goal today, to overcome that excessive concentration of self. That's what I suffer from. I like the Buddhists, they call it the dukkha, the suffering. You know, I suffer, and it's not that life is suffering. I suffer because I cause my suffering. I think that if she would just love me differently, then I could be happy. If they would just pay me more, then I could be happy. If I just live here, then I could be happy. And I suffer from these delusions that if external things change, then I could be happy. You know, and that's just not the fact. The fact is, if she's given me another chance, I still drank and left. They paid me more, I still drank and left. All these external things lined up before, and I still drank and left. You know, so I don't need to know about power. I need experience with this power. Faith without works is dead. I need to do the work that's associated with knowing about this power. I need experience with it. You know, after I experience the power, then I start to, once I've experienced the power, then I rely on it. That's how reliance grew. I experienced it enough times till I know that power is going to show up. Even when I don't get, you know, and I sat around the rooms for a little while and I'd see people like, oh, I was facing these charges and they dropped them and that's God, you know. It's like, oh, I didn't know how I was going to pay these bills and then this check came and that's God. And, you know, I was sitting around the rooms and the check didn't come. You know, I was sitting around there and they took the car. You know, then that was God. I was sitting around the rooms and she left and that was God. You know, and I had a sponsor that used to say, you know, this too shall pass. It's like, what do you mean this too shall pass? He was like, you know, the good things, the bad things, this too shall pass. You know, I'm so in love with her. I love her so much with all my heart. He said, don't worry, this too shall pass. It's like, oh, she left me, you know. how am I going to fix this? This too shall pass. You know, all these things that I think are making me happy, you know, I can be happy in the moment, but anything human that I rely on is going to fail me. The only thing that I can keep that's tangible is this relationship with power source in the moment. You know, and I get to access that. I've got daily practices on how I access that power. And yeah, ego rebuilds and self-pity and self-consumption, you know, it comes and it goes. And, you know, so we're works in progress. And don't beat yourself up over having thoughts of yourself, having thoughts of self-pity, you know, all those things, you know, excessive concentration of self. Don't beat yourself up for it. You know, we're human. I'm about done listening to me. I never know where I'm going to start or stop or, you know, but this feels like a pretty good point. I talked about surrender a lot, but here's gratitude. Why I'm so grateful for this program is because I didn't come looking for Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous. I didn't come looking for you guys. I was sitting in the treatment center, and you guys came and found me. You know, and that's what happened. Is my life big and cool now? Hell yeah, it is. I've got an amazing life that I still have problems feeling worthy of. You know, I've got an amazing family, a beautiful chihuahua. Is it chihuahua? An amazing partner. Just big, cool life, you know, and, but that's not why I'm happy. I got happy and then I got those things. You know, and so if you're wondering, you know, if I could just get a girl, then I could be happy. If I just get a partner, then I could be happy. If I just get, you know, this, then I could be happy. We get happy first and then the other things, you know, so spiritual law of attraction. You know, when I wasn't happy, I attracted unhappy. You know, when I wasn't worthy, I attracted unworthy. You know, and so I always, you know, when I talk to sponsees or friends about what, you know, relationships, and I sat through a really funny relationship meeting the other day. All the people that shared in the relationship meeting were like single, like old crispies, like. Talking about relationships, and but I wanted to share so bad, you know, because in relationships, I need to become what I'm looking for. You know, I want loyalty, so I become loyal. I want someone who's healthy, so I become healthy. You know, whatever I'm security, I want someone who's secure, so I become secure. You know, and those are the things, that's something that was taught to me. You know, I become what I want to attract. I've got nothing else, man. I'm done talking. I've talked a lot. So anyway, thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Abe. Good job.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Abe.
That was awesome, Abe. Thank you.
It was awesome, Abe. Great job, Abe. Thanks. Yeah.